This is a commercial-free, streaming on demand presentation from WBPN.
Wonderful Radio London. Whoopee.
In 1967, The Who had established themselves as one of the top rock and roll bands from the UK. With hits in America and home like I Can't Explain and My Generation, they were part of the British invasion that included the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Kinks. The problem was, The Who were nearly broke. In the fall of that year, which saw the release of landmark albums like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles, Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, and Are You Experienced by the Jimi Hendrix Experience, The Who's manager Kit Lambert informed Pete Townshend that they had to release an album to keep their new record label, Track Records, afloat. The band had just been on a long tour of America supporting Herman's Hermits, and Pete didn't think they had enough songs to make a great album.
It wasn't great stuff. It was good, I suppose, but, you know, it was very, very mixed. The Who were a little bit lost direction. I was a little bit lost as a writer. You know, it would have been getting towards the end of 67. I think our record company, Track Records, were hoping for a Christmas album. But the material felt to me like it was haphazard. I certainly hadn't had much time to write songs. We hadn't been in the studio consistently. Anyway, the meeting with me and Chris Stamp was a strange one because I said, you know, I really don't want to put the album out. And he said, well, it's coming out. And I said, what are you going to call it? And I think they had some weird name for it. It certainly wasn't The Who Sell Out. And I objected. And then I said, listen, maybe we can come up with something. So we got some food in and we got some wine in and we spent 2 hours talking and thinking. And we came up with the idea of selling commercials on the album to corporations and making up jingles. And this came out from a couple of places. One was the fact that we'd done a Coca-Cola commercial. We were one of only three acts that had done it. Ray Charles and Diana Ross had done one, and we were sort of almost unknown. And they had us do one, I suppose because we were sort of Carnaby Street swinging London Cool or something. So it was in our minds at the time. But I'd also done two songs for the American Cancer Society, which felt to me like commercials, in a sense. So it was kind of in the air at the time. And then Kit Lambert decided to go, who was our record producer at the time, as well as our manager, decided to turn it into a radio show, pirate radio show. And that's how it transpired.
The concept album, The Who Sell Out, was absolutely loved by critics and is one of Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time. On April 23rd, The Who, via UME Polydor, release a 5-disc super deluxe version of The Who Sell Out, complete with an 80-page hardback book with liner notes by Pete Townshend and delightful essays from those who worked with the band at the time and contributed to the making of the album. There are 112 tracks across 5 CDs and 2 7-inch singles, featuring 46 unreleased tracks, including 14 unheard Pete Townshend demos. The album will also be released as a 2-LP deluxe stereo vinyl version, featuring the original album and extra highlights from the box set, a 2-LP deluxe mono vinyl version, featuring the original album and extra highlights from the box set pressed on colored vinyl. Disc 1, Odorono Red, Disc 2, Baked Bean Orange, and a 2-CD 6-panel digipack with a 16-page booklet. We've got a lot to get to, so take it away, Pete.
Hi, I'm Pete Townshend. For the next hour, you'll hear a radio show about an album that we did almost like a bad radio play. You'll hear me, Roger, and the late John Entwistle act as your hosts, along with Dan Neer. Welcome to The Who Sell Out. All access.
I'm a billion ages past you, a million years behind you too, a thousand miles up in the air, a trillion times I've seen you there. Your hair is golden, mine is gray, you walk on grass, it turns to hay, your blood is blue and your eyes are red, my body's green. Can't reach you, I strain my eyes, I can't reach you, I split my sides, I can't reach, try to get on your seat, feel or hear. kisses grow greater now. You drink champagne and pass me proud. You fly your plane right over my head. You're so alive and I'm nearly dead. I can't reach you with arms outstretched. I can't reach you. I crane my neck. I can't reach. Try to get on your seat. Feel all here from you. Once I caught a glimpse of your unguarded, untouched heart, our fingertips touched and then my mind tore us apart. I can't reach you with arms outstretched. I can't reach you. I crane my neck. I can't reach. Trying to get on your seat. Feel all here from you.
From the newly released The Who Sellout Super Deluxe box set, I Can't Reach You. Despite Pete's misgivings about the quality of songs he had recorded for The Who Sellout, there was one that no one could quibble about.
It's got a great track on it, though, this, you know, because at the last minute we decided that we were going to pull out our plus card, our trump card that we've been keeping, which was this song called I Can See for Miles, and shoved it on the record. So the whole album ends up setting up that one track, which is a definitive Who track and a song. I don't know where I managed to pull it out of at that particular time, because there was such pressure on the Who in that first 2 or 3 years, but I wrote that song while I was away in Sweden one day and working.
Roger Daltrey.
I Can See for Miles. I think we recorded that at CBS down in Kingsway in London, and it was the first time we ever spent 2 days actually doing a single. I think we spent the whole day of that doing the harmonies and the backing vocals. It was great fun. We would lay in them layers and layers of these voices on, doing just sevenths and totally, really revolutionary things then, those kind of harmonies. I would say it was one of Kit Lambert's best production jobs ever. We finished that song off, actually. We came back off tour from the States with Herman's Hermits, and we wound up in LA, and we actually mixed the song at Gold Star in Los Angeles with Kit Lambert, who loved to use it because it was where the Everlys did their first recordings, and they had this kind of echo room there, that special echo. Who's to say it worked? I mean, it was a fabulous record, and it stands up today. The energy on that record is phenomenal. The actual backing track, I think, took about literally 2 hours, something like that, to get, and we spent ages on those vocals. The lead vocal was done very quickly, but then it, just doing all those harmonies, it was really exciting.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh, yeah. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, never see you when deliberately you put things in my way. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh, yeah.
far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. You've deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Eiffel Tower and the Taj Mahal might be on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, there's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna need that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles.
The Who's biggest single in the U.S., peaking at number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100, I Can See for Miles.
You're a pussy cat, you're where it's at, the one that's in on every play.
The AM's
Big Gal.
One of the things that I believe The Who has not gotten enough credit for in the history is the sense of humor you guys have, which I think is pretty damn evident on this collection of things. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I do. You know, it wasn't meant to be an entirely humorous project. It was meant to be ironic in that British sense, you know, an element of sarcasm, an element of tongue-in-cheek, you know, and also, you know, a bit of a celebration of pirate radio. When we first came to the USA in 67, one of the shocks wasn't AM radio, which was then the way that the top 20 records were delivered. It was the fact that that year, FM radio had begun. And FM radio in those days wasn't getting any money from advertising. It was funded by the AM radio parents. And what they were playing was anything and everything. They were playing rock, live shows, jazz, folk, some orchestral music and classical music sometimes. They were just playing anything that the jock felt would be of interest. But one of the things that they were doing were playing entire albums in the middle of the night. So after 11:30, they would start to play entire albums, and I imagine that the jock would sit back and smoke a joint and have a beer, and when it was finished, move on to something else. But it did mean that big albums, long albums, you know, semi-concept albums like Sgt. Pepper and Pet Sounds and so on, they broke big because people really got the message. It wasn't just, you know, a hit song. It was a creative process. And we had pirate radio, which was not a mirror of FM radio by any means. It was a mirror in the UK of AM radio. So it was just a way to sell singles. However, without the pirate radio stations, there were four or five at one point, the most famous in our genre were Radio London and Radio Caroline, but there were several others. We wouldn't have broken without those radio stations. Oh, you know, perhaps it's true to say that the Kinks, the Stones and the Beatles wouldn't have broken in the UK without those radio stations. So this album was not meant to be entirely funny. You know, it was meant to also say, listen, guys, you know, remember that in 67, the BBC, who had clamped down on the pirate radio stations, they hadn't really got their act together yet. It just wasn't very good. It didn't really replace what we were having. So this album was a thank you note to pirate radio. And, yeah, it was fun. We had a lot of fun making it. Yeah, we did.
I used to wake up in the morning, so glad I got so sick of having sleepless nights. I went and told my dad. He said, son, now here's some little somethings, stuck them on my wall. And now my nights ain't quite so lonely. In fact, I don't feel bad at all. Pictures of Lily, Lily, oh Lily, Lily, oh Lily. Pictures of Lily. And then one day things weren't quite so fine. I fell in love with Lily. I asked my dad, well, Lily, and he said, son, now don't be silly. She's been dancing 9 and 20. Oh, how I cried that night. If only I'd been falling in this time, it would have been alright. Pictures of Lily made my life so wonderful. Pictures of Lily help me sleep at night. For me and Lily are together in my dream. And I asked me, hey, mister, have you ever seen pictures of Lily?
From the Super Deluxe 5-CD box set of The Who Sell Out, a part of Pete Townsend's demo and the latest mix of Pictures of Lily. The Who did a double-sided single, Stone Songs, right, in June of 67, and that was because of what was happening, right?
Yeah, they got arrested, and we wanted to show some support. We recorded it the next day. They were still in police cells when we recorded it, and because we had our own record label with Track, we got it pressed and released and in the shops 2 days later, by which time they'd been released without charge. I'm just going to make this up now, but if I had have got a message from Keith Richards, it would have been something like, don't do it again, you.
Well, I told you once and I told you twice, but you never listened to my advice. Don't try very hard to please me, but what you know, it should come easy. Well, this could be the last time. This could be the last time. Maybe the last time. I don't know. Oh no. Oh no. But I'm sorry, girl, but I can't stay.
Covering the Rolling Stones' The Last Time, another gem from the Who Sell Out Super Deluxe box set, and the 2LP mono version, Disc 1 colored Odorono red and Disc 2 colored Heinz Baked Beans orange. One thing the late John Entwistle had wished for almost 30 years ago has been taken care of with the new Super Deluxe box set of the Who Sell Out.
It's a shame it didn't have the Great Shakes commercial on there. Well, that was really sick.
Well,
you can have your own soda fountain.
Hello, this is Keith Moon of The Who here. Two new Great Shake Shake mix scenes. Great Shakes Milk Chocolate and Great Shakes Cherry Vanilla flavors. Both turn milk into a rich, thick shake. So thick, it stands up to a straw. Great Shakes!
So if you want your own soda fountain now, go to the store and get Great Shake. Go to the store and...
Hey, look at this. A radio station that plays the biggest hits of all time. 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM. Who came up with this? It's brilliant.
It's smooth sailing with the highly successful sound of wonderful Radio London.
Marianne with the shaky hands. There's so much going on in that song between your guitar work. There's some sort of tremolo going on, I think, on the vocals.
Well, the tremolo on the vocals, the Marianne with the shake, that was a Kit Lambert stunt. I loved it. I got the mix of it, and I thought, wow, that's so cool. Why didn't I think of that? But a little bit before the Who Sell Out album, I'd had this idea to work with a group of misfits and to write songs about misfits. In fact, a little bit later, I met the guy that ran the Scene Club in New York, and he brought me in to see Tiny Tim. And there was a lot of talk then about me producing records with Tiny Tim, and I nearly did do an album with Tiny Tim. So I started to talk about and write about people that I thought, and I think one of them, the most famous one, is probably Happy Jack, which is about, yes, really about somebody who is kind of mentally ill and is an object of derision and mischief, but seems happy nonetheless. And Marianne with the Shaking Hands was a similar one. In the documentary we did the other day, I said, well, this is about, you know, a kid who was suffering from autism. And the guy that was interviewing me went, ha! I said, why the ha? And he said, well, it's about this girl that's got, does things with her hands, isn't it? And I said, well, yeah, but are you saying that a girl with shaky hands can't use them on a man? But You know what's interesting? Autism is something that afflicts young boys much more than young girls. It's interesting. So it was one of the songs that I was looking at about being disabled or being mentally ill or having suffered terrible trauma or having delusions of grandeur, like with my song King Rabbit, which, you know, serious Who fans will know about. All of this stuff led directly to Tommy and the thematic scheme there of a character who is actually really pretty screwed up because of having an extremely psycho post-war childhood. So there's a lot of songs like Marianne with the Shaky Hands.
Linda's got looks, Jean reads books, Cindy can sew, but I'd rather know. Mary Ann with the shaky hands, but they don't remember shaky hands.
Mary is so pretty, the prettiest in the land. Guys come from every city just to shake her shaky hands. Linda can cook, she reads books, Cindy can sew, but I'd rather know. Mary Ann with the shaky hands, they don't do a man no shake.
Part of the demo and the original of Mary Ann with the Shaky Hands. The cover of The Who Sell Out featured Pete Townsend applying underarm deodorant from a tube of Odorono, Keith Moon using Medac pimple cream, John Entwistle got to wear a leopard skin rug, have his chest fake tattooed with a pierced heart, and to pose with a teddy bear and bikini-clad model Jill Langham. And Roger? Well, he got to pose in a tub of Heinz baked beans.
Well, if anyone wanted to get me into a tub of baked beans again, they'd have to put them in the, at least put them in the oven a little bit first, because those beans they used on the Who Sell Out album were straight out of the fridge. And I was sitting there absolutely freezing. And then some bright spark, I think it was Keith Moon, got a two-bar electric fire, which they stuck up the back of the bathtub, which you can't see in the photograph, but it is actually there. And by the time I got out of the bathtub, half of it was cooking and bubbling and the other half was freezing. I'll never do that again. I got pneumonia from that. It was terrible. Yeah. Don't recommend it. Not bathing in baked beans.
Dum, 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 Duran. Dum, 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 Duran. Seen that girl who smiling so brightly. Dum, 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 Duran. Well, then she's cool and reckon brightly. Show you why they call me like Dun 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 Duran. Dun 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 Duran. Dun Dun Dun.
found the original version of The Who Sell Out, but now found on the Super Deluxe box set, Call Me Lightning, featuring a lead break from bass player extraordinaire, the late John Entwistle. Summertime Blues was included in this set.
So it seems, yeah. That was a big song from our live act at the time. When we first came to the States, we occasionally played that, but we certainly played it when we went to... Before Monterey, we came to Detroit and we played a little club in Detroit. We met the guys in the MC5. I don't know if they were even a band then, but they were certainly crazy guys. And then we came to San Francisco and we played two nights at the Fillmore West, and the original one in San Francisco, which was a great big old cinema or theater, and we would have played that song there. It was one, you know, I remember Bill Graham saying you've got to do two sets and you've got to play for at least an hour, and our sets at the time were probably around 40 minutes because we'd always done tours where, you know, they call them package tours. You'd have between 8 and 20 artists, so we certainly couldn't play an hour. So I said to Bill, do you mind if we play the same 10 songs twice? And he said, yeah, sure. So we were played the same 10 songs four times a night.
Well, I'm a gonna raise a buzz, I'm a gonna raise a holler about a working all summer just to try to earn a dollar. Well, I went to the boss, get the call for a date, but the boss said,
no tired son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
The car, cause you didn't work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime
your son, but you're too young to vote.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm going to do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Summertime blues. Summertime blues.
The Who's studio version of Summertime Blues. The next segment of The Who Sell Out All Access is coming in just a few minutes.
Hi, this is Pete Townsend, and now, a word from our sponsor.
Relax. Hey, take a minute to load up our website, 929wbpm.com, and poke around a bit. It'll give us a nice pie chart to show the corporate suits next month.
Hi, this is Pete Townsend, and now here's your friendly announcer.
Thanks, Pete. I'm Dan Neer. And this is Roger Daltrey.
I mean, we'd always tried to do different things. We were quite an innovative group in those days. I mean, we used to smash up our gear. We experimented with clothes. We did the Who Sell Out, which was done like a pirate radio station from England, you know. I don't think it ever crossed our minds, what's this got to do with the Who? It was, how do we make this work for the Who, which was important.
Our love was... famine, frustration,
like a summer morning. Flying, soaring, shining, morning, never leaving.
Our Love Was from the Who Sell Out Super Deluxe Set. Once again, John Entwistle.
I really hated playing Magic Bus. And the Magic Bus was sometimes like 8 minutes of A. You know, dunky 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 dunk dunk. There are certain recordings where it actually sounds like I fall asleep. Like, nod off.
Pete Townsend.
You know, there must have been many songs that I wrote that John didn't really like. I mean, when you listen to his compositions, I remember when I was developing the arrangements for the movie of Tommy, I remember analysing Cousin Kevin and thinking, bloody hell, this is a classical fugue. You know, it's written to fugue rules. It has a repeating phrase in it that goes round and round and round and changes all the time. But it's the same theme, and it's beautiful as a piece of music. It's about a, you know, a horrid bully, but it's a beautiful piece of music. And I think he was a proper, you know, he was a musician. He could read and write music. He could play horns of all different kinds. You know, as you later heard on Quadrophenia, he did such extraordinary work. He played the French horn on Tommy. You know, the thing about this is that, you know, each of members of the band had their own agenda. Roger has his own agenda today. You know, he still finds it quite difficult sometimes to work with me. I certainly find it difficult to work with him. But back then, you know, there were four of us and we all had completely different taste. But those three guys supported me in every crazy idea that I ever had.
Every day I get in the queue, get on the bus that takes me to you. I'm so nervous I just sit and smile. Your house is only another mile. Thank you, driver, for getting me here. You'll be an inspector, have no fear. I don't wanna cause no fuss, can I buy your magic bus? I don't care how much I pay. I want
want it, I 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 want it.
Broken sand, sixpence every day, just to drive to my baby. Throwing 10 sixpence each day, 'cause I drive my baby every way.
Magic Bus from The Who, one of the band's most popular songs and a concert staple.
One of the ridiculously interesting and fun things for me to do was reading these essays and the liner notes and all that sort of stuff about getting different perspectives on that. Was that something you enjoyed too?
Yeah, I love it. I love this package. I did the demos, mixes, and some of it was sort of, you know, fixing and repairing some of the demos, which I can do now with computers. You know, I had tape stretch and tape dropouts and stuff that was, you know, in the wrong key and stuff, and I was able to fix it with a computer. But I did that in April 2017. I was ready for the album to come out. It's meant to come out on its 50th anniversary, which would have been December 2017, and it was delayed, and I don't quite know why it was delayed, but it just got more and more delayed. So finally getting it this year earlier, and getting a couple, or maybe the end of last year, I got some test packages, and opening it up and realizing that it's actually got a big thick kind of heavy book, which is sort of like a Genesis Publications, you know, the story of George Harrison and Ravi Shankar, except it's The Who Sell Out. And there, you're right, there are some really interesting essays in there. There's an essay from the guy from Coca-Cola, who was the ad agency guy that booked The Who.
Your demos are like finished records in many, many ways. I mean, I wonder if that's why sometimes Roger has difficulty imagining him singing some of them, because they're so well done.
I don't think it's about the fact that the demos are good or bad or indifferent. I think he got used to that pretty soon. I think it is exemplified by this record. I mean, look at it. The Glow Girl, Faith in Something Bigger, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, Little Billy, Dogs, a song about dog racing, you know, Melancholia, which is a song, the original title of Melancholia was The Virus. It was about manic depression. You know, the poor guy must have wondered where the songs were coming from, to be honest, because my pitch to him in 63 was, man, we've got to be an R&B band. And of course, he was great at that stuff. He was just so great at Howling Wolf and Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley songs and all of that stuff. He was so great at R&B. And then suddenly there I am. You know, I became like a writer of comedy songs to some extent.
comedy and very deeply personal and artistic songs as well. Let's talk about the song that I think that was something to do with the way you guys used to travel around, yes?
The song that grew directly out of being on tour, particularly with Armour's Hermits, was Glow Girl, which included, I think, It's a Boy, Mrs. Walker, It's a Boy.
But it said, I'm a girl.
It was a girl, yeah, it's a girl.
Mrs. So Walker, your rock opera could have been Tammy, not Tommy, right?
Of shoes, lots of walls, makeup, a A song that had some ideas that eventually became part of The Who's Rock Opera Tommy album, Glow Girl.
The Who had some dates left that you got canceled because of lockdown. Do you know what's going to become of them, or is it too early to tell?
It probably is. You know, if I guess, I reckon we might replace our UK shows that we missed with the orchestra, because we only did one orchestral show in the UK, which was Wembley Stadium. We might be able to replace those this year, late. And we might be able to start off a tour next year in the spring at some point. But, you know, we've just heard here in the UK that there's a number of new variants of this damn virus, you know, which are coming up. So God only knows what this is about, yeah. You know. And I think, you know, for me, I have to say, last year, there's a lot of people going to hate me for saying this. You know, the year before, in 2019, I had a novel to publish called The Age of Anxiety. And I had finished the Who album with Roger. And I knew that they were coming out, that they were separated by 3 months or 4 months. And what actually happened was is that the Who album was brought forward and the book release was put back. And so they were only 3 weeks apart. And by the time I'd finished the PR on both of them, I was close to having what I suppose, you know, pop stars call a nervous breakdown. You know, I was just screwed up. I was exhausted. And I drove one day, I got up 5 a.m. to go and do a morning show in London with a friend of mine, Chris Evans. And I got there and the guy at the door said, "So, Mr. Townsend, I hope you don't mind going through our security system. It's just like you would get at the airport." And I thought, no, I'm not going through your security system. Turned around and went home. And I kind of reached breaking point. And I think when COVID happened in March, the Who were about to do a UK tour, followed closely by an American tour. And I was thinking, I don't know that I can do this. So when COVID hit, I thought, thank you, God.
Oh, jeez. Well, there's the silver lining, I guess.
Yeah, but now I'm, you know, I'm like everybody else, I'm climbing the walls. You know, I'm close to going and doing some busking.
The Who Sell Out is available in multiple editions on CD, vinyl, or digitally. Check them all out wherever you buy music. The Who Sell Out, All Access, was produced in New Jersey by Near Perfect Productions for UME Polydor Records, all rights reserved. No portion may be reproduced without the written permission of the producers. Special thanks to Jamie Hartley of UME, all the good folks at Trinifold Management, Todd Nakamini, and Nicola Joss. I'm Dan Neer.
Hi, this is Roger Daltrey.
Hello, this is John Entwistle.
And I'm Pete Townsend, and thanks for listening.
Jack White!